From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. And on this day, Maine legislators are in Augusta to deal with vetoes, but it's not clear if they'll reconvene to deal with outstanding business. Also, one of those vetoes that lawmakers overturned allows marijuana sales to go forward some 2 years after voters approved that direction at the ballot box. That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Norway Savings, supporting the colorful vision of Maine's business owners. Live your life in color. NorwaySavings.bank.
Well, the legislature is back in session in Augusta at this hour, but whether they'll extend the session to consider dozens of bills is uncertain. Mal Leary has the latest.
Lawmakers dealt with 20 vetoes from Governor LePage in a few hours, overriding some, sustaining others. But then the House stalled over extending the session to consider a number of bills still before lawmakers. House Speaker Sarah Gideon offered a 4-day extension, and an attempt to reduce that to a single day failed, and now further votes are expected. It was clear from floor comments that there's a trust issue between Republicans and Democrats. There are some big issues unresolved, like school funding, Medicaid expansion, and funding for direct care workers. If lawmakers do not extend the session by midnight, this session of the legislature ends with a lot of issues unresolved. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The legislature has finally agreed on a bill that will allow for the retail sale and cultivation of recreational marijuana. The House and Senate both voted today to override a veto of the bill by Governor Paula Page, which means the bill is now law. We brought in political correspondent Steve Missler to explain what the new law does and what happens next. So, Steve, I have a feeling there are quite a few people wondering why this bill is even necessary. Voters passed that law at the ballot box nearly 2 years ago, so why didn't that legalize the cultivation and sale of marijuana in the state then?
Well, they did, but that law was deeply flawed in the eyes of the legislature, which had reservations of how marijuana will be taxed, legalizing social clubs, which would be like bars, except people would be allowed to consume marijuana on the premises. And they also were concerned about how products would be packaged and labeled and tested. So the legislature basically set out and created a special committee to rewrite the entire law that voters approved at the polls in 2016. The committee's first bill made a bunch of changes. It was about 80 pages long. And to put that in perspective, the original bill that voters passed was 30 pages. That committee's bill initially gained a lot of support, but Governor LePage vetoed it, and the legislature couldn't muster the votes to override him. So this new law is the legislature's second attempt to rewrite the ballot law that voters approved, and it is vastly different than the voter-approved measure. It's also very different from the first rewrite attempt that failed.
So how is the proposal different from the one that failed to pass in the fall?
So keep in mind that the only way this bill was ever going to get enough votes to get past the governor's veto was to make changes that would appeal to Republican lawmakers who typically align with LePage and who share his opposition to legal marijuana. Yet among those Republicans are those people who don't want to leave the 2016 law the way that it is. Now, remember that that law is still in place. That means adults age 21 and older can grow marijuana on their property and they can consume it in non-public places. People can do that right now, even before this new bill became law today. Now, there are quite a few lawmakers who oppose recreational marijuana, but who recognize that it's also legal, and there's likely no turning back from that. So the bill writers attempted to court those lawmakers in the new bill by making a range of concessions. Now, among them, it's currently legal for adults to grow up to 6 mature plants. Well, the legislature thought that that was too many, so they cut personal cultivation in half to 3 mature plants. They also scrubbed entirely social clubs. They're not even in the bill at all any longer. And they made it so that municipalities have to opt in, such as a vote from a town council or select board, to legally allow a retail or growing facility within town limits. And they also did something that could really limit the number of places that where people can buy or sell marijuana, at least in the near future. They created an effective tax rate of about 20%, and that includes a 10% retail rate. But the state isn't going to share any of that revenue with municipalities. Now, that's important because there are likely going to be a lot of municipalities that won't participate in this market if they're not going to receive any tax revenue benefit.
Basically, this is just a very conservative proposal.
Yeah, that's right. It's really a proposal that in many places aligns with the conservative votes that were needed to make it a law. But it's also a proposal comfortable for supporters of legal marijuana. So remember, again, Maine is just one of eight states that has legalized adult use marijuana. And the 2016 ballot initiative just barely passed. It was even a recount. Now, and there are a lot of people who are very wary of putting Maine on the leading edge of the country's lurch toward legal pot. I heard several lawmakers even compare this law to the instructions that one might find on a package of marijuana edibles, which is start low and go slow. And that's pretty much the approach the legislature has taken here.
So social clubs are off, but now that the bill is law, does that mean we're going to see a bunch of marijuana shops popping up everywhere?
Not soon. The bill contains a lot of licensing procedures that will take some time to implement, and that implementation will really be the responsibility of state government. So last I checked, Governor Paul LePage is still no fan of legal marijuana, and he also controls the state bureaucracy that will need to start that implementation process. So it's possible that he could just slow walk implementation to a point where it takes many, many months before retail sales are actually taking place.
Maine Public Radio's political correspondent, Steve Missler. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Jen.
Well, most of the time, environmental advocates and the owners of fossil fuel power plants battle over how much pollution is acceptable, given the need to keep the lights on. But in Maine, they're now aligning against a common enemy, Central Maine Power. Fred Bever explains.
CMP wants to build a 145-mile transmission line through the state's western forests. The $950 million project would sluice energy from Canada's Hydro-Québec dam system down to Massachusetts consumers if and when a contract is finalized. Some projections suggest it could bolster company profits by $60 million a year. CMP is seeking various permits, including one from the Maine Public Utilities Commission. The commission's deadline for arguments in the case was this week, and they've been piling up.
This new transmission line has no climate change benefits and might actually increase total greenhouse gas emissions.
In effect, Maine generators need to be shut off. Some of them are considering retiring, and it definitely puts them over the edge.
The wind projects that would want to come after and try to qualify would be unable to do so.
Those are just three of the themes emerging among opponents and critics of the CMP project. First arguments, although it's being billed as a way to bring low-polluting hydropower to Massachusetts, no net reduction in carbon dioxide emissions would result. Dylan Voorhees is with the Natural Resources Council of Maine.
Robbing Peter to pay Paul is not increased demand for hydropower. If Hydro-Québec simply wants to redirect the sale of hydropower into New York or Ontario or somebody else to Massachusetts because they'll pay more, that doesn't increase demand for hydropower.
Second argument, the influx of massive amounts of Canadian electricity to the grid would in the short term suppress electricity prices in New England. That might seem good for consumers, but ultimately it would drive struggling energy plants in Maine out of business and put their workers on the street. Tanya Bodell is a consultant for Calpine, which runs a natural gas-fired plant in Westbrook.
And the list of plants that we would anticipate would be most likely to look at retirement includes the Rumford Power plants, Maine Independence Station, Andrew Scogan Energy Center, and Bucksport Generation, a combination of gas turbines and steam.
Wyman Station in Casco Bay could be a victim as well, she says. But it's not just fossil fuel generators who are raising the alarm. Francis Pallaro, executive director of Renew Northeast, which represents wind and solar power developers, says connecting wind projects to the high-voltage direct current line CMP is proposing would be prohibitively expensive. And the electricity from Quebec would take up a lot of capacity on the regional grid, making it that much harder for future renewable projects in Maine and elsewhere to find a place on the system.
This project is going to take up all the headroom there is on the transmission system, then it's going to make it a lot more expensive for the renewables. So I think at a minimum, we'd like to see that this project not disadvantage renewables in that way.
CMP is well armed for the arguments.
The greenhouse gas question seems, in my mind, as though it turns 20 years of public policy on its head.
Spokesman John Carroll says even if Hydro-Québec doesn't build new dams to serve the Massachusetts contract, states would still require greater reductions in carbon dioxide emissions.
Those mandates will continue to grow. And the notion that we suddenly will stop creating new renewable resources in the face of growing demand for it is just at odds with, you know, our experience over the last two decades.
As for the idea that the project would curtail development of new wind generation in western Maine, Carroll says this line serves a different purpose.
And it's perfectly suited to that need. Some of these groups are looking at CMP to build something that benefits their business. But it's a simple case that if wishes were horses, beggars would ride.
And Carroll has little sympathy for complaints from fossil fuel generators.
This is a competitive market now for electricity generation, and some competitors see a threat to their businesses or just an opportunity to advance their own interests, and that's how they're trying to use this process.
The technical details underlying all of these arguments are complicated, and not just for financial winners or electricity users. The future design of the region's energy system is at stake. Maine regulators are expected to weigh in on the issue by early fall, with an emphasis on whether it provides benefits for Mainers. The CMP project is also subject to review by federal and regional regulators, as well as Massachusetts officials. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for this Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin, Susan Charon, and Patty White, who helped on the show, and, of course, our digital team. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.